Hi everyone, and welcome to the Curve Mindset Podcast with McGinley Coaching. I'm your founder and host, Lorna McGinley. Today we're joined by Izzy Pollard. How are you?
I'm good, thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
No worries. Just to the listeners, and there could be a wee bit of background noise as my one-year-old son has decided to, you know, wreck the place. But other than that, we should be fine. But can you just tell us this is the side of football people don't see, you know, but can you just tell the listeners a wee bit of background of yourself and the kind of current journey you're on?
Yeah, sure. So I started playing, I mean, I'm 48 now. Probably could kick a ball before I could walk. When I first started playing, it wasn't the FA that was in charge, it was the WFA. So I ended up getting in touch with them, playing for Bradford City, played for a team called Bronte, then got an opportunity to go down south. So I played for Millwall Lionesses, which then led to a great opportunity in Sweden to play semi-pro. Managed to get involved with the England squad, more of a fringe player, but still gained some caps. Came back to Doncaster Bells, which was fantastic. And ended my career at Leeds United for 7 years as captain, all barely semi-pro, playing on a Sunday, travelling to matches on a Saturday and training two or three times a week, which took like 2.5 hours to get there. So it was tough going.
And do you think now, because of the professionalism in football now, in the men's game and in the women's game, that the part-time players are expected to be full-time athletes at the moment, in a way? Because you look at WSL and then you've got Championship, and then you're looking at maybe the Northern and Southern League, you look at maybe Newcastle, you know, as an example. I know they're flying high at the moment, but they'll probably be in full-time. But that's it's a structure that's obviously helped with the funding, but also helps probably with that, probably the wrong team in the wrong league, if that makes sense in a way. Do you think that's... Do you think it's going to happen? More part-time players are expected to do a full-time job plus a potential full-time athlete, or do you think it's going to be? It's all about kind of measuring what resources you have, so to see what you get the best out of them.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a balance of everything. To be honest, I think the tricky thing is for the, you know, maybe the non-Premier League, the non sort of like Championship teams that have got clubs affiliated to them, is the funding, because they struggle independently as football clubs anyway. For example, Halifax Town, who've got a women's side that's just been affiliated in the last few years, and you know, are there limits? You know, like Newcastle, obviously they're in the same league as Halifax, performing phenomenally because they're full-time athletes. Will Halifax get that? Will there be a pressure to want to go to teams that have got like a bigger status, like your Newcastle, your Man United, Leicester even, you know, and leave the lower league, non-affiliated clubs? I don't know. I think there's going to be a surge towards the higher level clubs.
Yeah, because you've probably seen it with Reading, you know, like they were the kind of last team last year that were associated with kind of the men's team. But then it's like you could see that when they get relegated, they have to go part-time. There's obviously a lot of structure issues with the men's team and the women's team. But it's do you think the idea of like a Sunderland or a Southampton, you know, who are in the cusp of Crystal Palace, that they're doing it the right way of not putting everything in? They're just strategically thinking, right, this is maybe the right way to do things, but might take us another 2-3 years, but we know that we've got the finance, we need to make it self-sustainable, which is another big issue, you know, with them. And also I'm just looking at, you know, big clubs that maybe are needing a little bit more support, you know, with kind of through the men's section, but also through even growing the women's section a bit more, you know, in different departments.
Yeah, I do. I think that will happen, because it's kind of like you've got to prove yourself still, potentially, in a way. You know, like Man United was slow to the women's game, I think. But fortunately, they had the finances and they could reel in the best players, couldn't they? Whereas someone like Southampton, they are doing it the right way, and they are developing a strategy and a pathway for emerging talent. with probably little funding.
Yeah, and you, but do you think kind of the first question asked about the funding and maybe the a lot? Do you think there's a pressure of sometimes people just going for it and not thinking of the kind of long term effects? Because if you go for it, you've got athletes who are working 12-hour days and then expected to do 3 nights of training for it, and their body is not used to it. You know, you see more ACL injuries. You see more I've seen the research now. A lot of more is thigh injuries now because there's so much more you need to do with like sprints and all that. Do you think that's it's good to the common sense way is actually sometimes to slow things down in some departments and speed up in other departments, such as like marketing. You know, I know you look at Arsenal and their marketing team is phenomenal because they do a lot. Obviously, they're a wee bit of a mishap, you know, with the player they tried to sign, which was in the background, but that's a different story. But do you think that, like, having the marketing and ramping that up, you know, and having the, I think they did 4 games for £50 or something like that, you know, just trying to get more fans in, is it good to accelerate in one part, but also not being over simplistic in other parts? Just let the people do their jobs and it will happen. But I think we live in a generation or a time where we want everything now when it's not actually feasible to do things now.
Yeah, I see where you're coming from. I think players, certainly maybe towards the mid to late end of the career, are maybe desperate for an opportunity to play at a more, you know, semi-pro or professional level. But going back to how it was pre-pro or pre-semi-pro, I mean, players were doing that week in, week out, weren't they? They were playing sort of like, playing on a Sunday, travelling to games on a Saturday, and training 2 or 3 times a week. It was just a given. It was granted. That's what they did. I suppose now, especially for, I mean, they don't have the same pressures, say that, in terms of like getting to training or planning and prioritising the workload because they're professional. But Emma Hayes was saying, wasn't she, about increasing the leagues. But taking less pressure off the amount of games, especially in the Champions League, whether that'll mean lengthening the season, I'm not too sure how it'll work. But I think at some point, at Chelsea, they're playing like 3 games a week at one point. Yeah. I'm not too sure with the Champions League and the domestic league as well. It needs somebody like her who has got a voice to express the, you know, the challenges that the girls are facing. As professional athletes now, they need to be protected.
This is a bit maybe controversial. I heard something. Obviously, Emma Hayes is very well known. I mean, she's incredible what she does. But she's really the only person that people associate with women's football in a way. And obviously, you get Jill Ellis, you know. But do you think it's time for teams to start winning things? You know, like I know you look at Barcelona and they're incredible, but they've got like they believe in the women's system. But then you look at like a Paris FC, you know, who beat Arsenal, but unknown to an extent, but they're doing really well. But they're pushing people in the like PSG and Lyon. But you look at Montpellier, you've got like in Roma, you know, you've got. Do you think it's sometimes good to have a voice like Emma Hayes, but also have a team like a Scottish team and an English team do well? So therefore, it's fighting that kind of, it's not the battle, but there's a bit more of a one person is actually a team of people, you know, and then you've got different, like Hope Powell, for example, was really, really incredible what she did. You know, like, I remember listening to her. She took the 16s, the 18s, she took the first team, but she did everything because there was no help. Now there is help, but sometimes it's good to have a voice, but it's also good to have, like, what you're saying, what the experiences you have, the ex-pros, you know, like your Kelly Smith coming on. Do you think it's good to have different voices in the women's game that have seen this, you know, the progression of the professionalism?
Yeah, definitely. And I suppose it does fall on Emma because Chelsea are so successful, aren't they? So they are at the forefront and they are in the news all the time. So it does tend to be Emma that is the voice. I suppose, I mean, Arsenal have got knocked out of the Champions League, haven't they, by Paris FC, and had they have not been knocked out, we would have had another voice, whether it would have been Jonas or whether it would have been Kelly Smith being concerned about the amount of games and the amount of pressure that, that they were under.
Yeah. But do you think that then you look at like the Champions League? Oh, sorry, he wants to talk. Oh, that's what it is. That's what it really is. Do you think that in the Champions League, no, because they talked about this, like Mark Skinner, and they talked about like the big teams versus the big teams, and then it's like a bit of a knockout. Do you think it sounds terrible, but a Champions League is the best of the best? So therefore, yeah, if it's not good enough, then you've not done your job. You know what I mean? And that's a terrible thing to say, but you wouldn't see a lot of the men's teams complaining when they play against a Barcelona versus a Bayern Munich or something in the last 16 tie or something like that. Do you think it's sometimes it's good that, so it's terrible, the big teams get knocked out, so therefore there's a bit of a reality check on, actually, because everyone focuses on the Premiership a lot because of the WSL and all that, and also in the men's team, but do you think it's good that sometimes the big teams go out, you know, like your Arsenal, your Juventus and all that, so therefore you see more, don't say shocks, but you see unknown teams like I know Slavia Prague. You've got Haken, like the Scandinavian countries we'll talk about soon. Do you think it's good that we see the exposure now of more European teams that are in the Champions League? You know, and I think they're going to talk about Europa League in the next couple of years. But is it good to have that kind of balance of the best against the best, but also having the I don't say inverted commas, smaller teams beat the bigger teams, kind of helps their profile a little bit more?
Without a doubt. It's huge exposure, isn't it, for these teams. But like you say about Paris, I mean, Alicia Russo went to Arsenal to play a great level of Champions League football, and they were knocked out quite rapidly by Paris. And it was always sort of like Lyon, who were the big game players, and PSG. Paris was, and it's definitely an eye opener, because then it just create opportunities for players to go there. Probably more funding for Paris for getting through to the next rounds. But certainly, it's brilliant to see so many teams, and hopefully the leagues will get bigger, and then we can see more European teams that have got opportunities for international players to get out there and sign for on pro contracts.
Yeah, because you look at pro contracts now, obviously, this is the big, I was listening to the Sporting Directors podcast, the guys at the VSI, and they talked about a few things, but they made a really good point of, and it's, everyone, the US, obviously, I watched that documentary, and it was very interesting, you know, the culture, and how it's, the win is everything, you know, and it's the pressure is unbelievable. It's like, basically, I've seen pressure, and this is another level. But again, that's put externally on, more internally. But again, it's all about the kind of finances, and also the backup of the things. But they talk about equal pay, a lot of the things, and there's a lot of, you see this, I don't want to say a debate, but obviously, everyone, you look at the men's team, you know, like a player on £200,000 a week, and then people are saying, oh, women should get paid £200,000 a week. And I'm like, but if you look at the finance, a women's team might make £200,000 a year. So it's like, how do you think it is, equal pay is good, but do you think there is an element of you have to be realistic to what you're working with and what you've got, compared to, like, you look at, you look at Chelsea, you know, they're bringing a player in for £250,000, you know, $250,000, and then that's someone's budget for a year for a team. It's good to have that, but sometimes you have to be realistic to what you have. Do you think that's the realism of football now, or do you think it's actually going to be, sounds terrible, but be a negative effect when people think about these things and they don't really know how football works in a way? They just see the numbers. And
I see where you're coming from, and it's a really difficult debate, but I think going from where it's been within the last 10 years to where it's at now, not just with like player contracts, I mean, these players have got agents that can negotiate the finer detail, but also the endorsements these players are receiving, whether it is from Nike or from Reebok or from Costa or whatever. I don't think, obviously the girls want to earn money, and there was the big concern about the Lionesses at the World Cup, where was the, you know, the arrangement with the FA and the money. So it is a growing concern. And yes, I'm not too sure that it should be even measured against the men's at this stage. I mean, it's only in the last sort of like 5 to 10 years that we've been getting massive gates filling Wembley. And I like the, you know, the journey that it's on, and that it is developing at a really nice rate, and the players are being rewarded.
Yeah.
For the success.
Yeah.
And I don't think they're greedy. I don't think that they, you know, yeah, for the next generation of players and the next two generation of players, we might be looking at £1 million contracts and things like that. But the fact that Ciara Walsh went, I don't know, whether did she go for 500,000 to yeah. Barcelona? I mean, who'd have thought that 20 years ago?
Yeah, because that's the thing. 10 years ago. Do you think, because that's the you look at, I think you look at sport and we look at football, and it's obviously the biggest industry in the world, you know, like per se, you know, but you look at Maine, you know, and the men's team, you've got clubs paying, you know, £1 billion over a transfer market, and then you've got Arsenal paying like 200,000-300,000, you know, for different players and all that. But is it sometimes, is it, you said the journey, do you think the journey, Ruben, sorry, do you think the journey is actually good to have that kind of journey of being realistic, to therefore it's there's a pride on basically how they've got there, instead of like spending so much money when it should really sometimes enjoying the journey, which lots of people really struggle with. It's they want to get from to the bottom of Everest to the top very quickly when there's so much things that have to happen, you know. So I'm just wondering, is that something you've probably seen?
Yeah, I think certainly this current generation have experienced life not as a non-professional, as a non-semi-professional. And I'd like to think that you know, it's about the fact that they're out there and they're enjoying the football, and obviously these girls have got careers now, so it's got, you know, it would be unfair to say that it's not about the money, because for every employment opportunity it's about the money. But the fact that these girls are out there doing what they love, like Millie Bright was probably playing before it even became professional. Certainly Jill Scott, who has experienced it as a non-professional, as a semi-professional, and as a professional player, and is still a fabulous person. I think the best thing that she ever did was going, "I'm a celebrity," wasn't it?
Yeah, she's actually brilliant, because I think it's that T-shirt, obviously the slogan she said to the German player, it was like, and I'm obviously, but it's, but you look at these, the players that are like, that now, but they owe so much to the generation before, the ones that are in the, do you, like, I've heard the, like, you said, like, you turn up on a Saturday night, you're in there Sunday morning, and you're basically, some of these players are on contracts that are covering, you know, you need to go on holiday, you need to go and do this, you need to do that. Is it now getting more normalised, not in just in football, but in women's sport in general, you know, and even in sport in general, that there is a, because I played disability football, I was a Scotland international, but we had to take time off our work because we didn't get paid, but we got expenses. But do you think it's good to have, because a lot of the generation now is after now, as I said before, but it's good to have that kind of, you know, gratitude. And I think that's the biggest thing I see in women's football, is everyone's very grateful for where they've went. But it doesn't matter if you played at the WSL level or amateur football, you're still, I always say, if you played a sport, you're a professional in my eyes, because you're still, you're not better than anyone, you're still, but you want to be better every day. Is that something that you've seen in the, obviously from your career, that you've seen it from the top and the bottom?
Yeah, Laurie, it's been, you know, former Lionesses provided a, you know, pathway, whatever you want to call it, But it wasn't just them. It was every woman that played football, you know, from the bloody 20s up to, you know, certainly in my era, which was like the 90s and the noughties. It was every female player that played at that time, every manager, every coach who contributed to the success of the Lionesses now. So it's not just former Lionesses. It's everyone that was involved in the game at that time, because it was tough. You didn't think it was tough at the time, because we loved it. But it was certainly time consuming. We played it as though we were professionals. Our mentality was as professionals. We just did it voluntary.
Yeah. And this is a kind of question on professionalism and mindset. Do you think it's the... I always had this expression, like, when, what's important now? Because we, as practitioners and people who work in the industry, everyone wants to get everywhere so fast, when sometimes I actually enjoy the journey at the moment, because I'm actually enjoying the coaching, but I'm also learning about, like, the sporting director's roles, physio roles, tactical roles. If there is an opportunity to, if it ever happened, work at a first team, then I would be more comfortable, you know, working in that. But do you think it's now that we talk about CPD, do you think everyone wants to just, and I'm probably guilty of this too, we want to learn all the time, but sometimes it's good to learn how to switch off, how to go out with a family, how to go, you know, go out. And it's like, I'm going out with my son tomorrow, and we're going to go to a kind of soft play, and then we're going to go out for dinner, and we're going to, but that's because I've learned that sometimes everyone thinks work is 24/7, when sometimes the best thing is actually a child or a dog or family and friends to turn off. Is that something that you've probably, I know when you were playing, is that something that you tried to do, or is it more in the profession you're in the moment, just to try and, it's like work-life balance, but really people really struggle with that, because they think, I need to get this done, and if I don't get it done, then something's going to happen, when sometimes it's just, it's actually like turn the laptop off and actually go out for a walk, you know. And is that something that mental health is a big thing in the world at the moment? Do you think we put too much pressure on ourselves to be the best, when we compare ourselves to other people, when you have no idea that they may be struggling the same way as you are, but they've got a smile on their face, and it's like I don't say, but like an Instagram post of, oh, I done this today, brilliant, but you could be miserable for 23 hours of that day, but the hour you're, and it's just, I'm just, because it's something I'm talking to a lot of people about, and how you balance it, and nobody's found the solution, and it's, I don't think there is a solution, but it's just little tips. What do you think you've kind of learned from that in the last maybe wee while?
I mean, it's different now, isn't it, Laurie? Because obviously you've got your pro players, and they've got their sort of relaxing to determine. And then you've got your managers and your coaches are under tremendous pressure, and they've got to find their way of coaching, of switching off. Prior, as kids, when we were playing, I don't think we probably wanted to switch off.
Yeah.
I think it's only, you know, it was like a non-stop scenario. It was 24/7. We just wanted to be involved. But certainly, as an adult now, it's critical to switch off. I mean, I think the worst thing or the best thing, whichever way you want to look at it, is there's so many opportunities now in the women's game for men, for women, whether it is in for, like what you were saying about scouting, whether it's for talent ID, technical support, tactical, emotional. There's just a wealth of opportunity and pathways for everyone to be on, and it's quite exciting. So again, it's difficult to switch off, and you've really got to find that time to, like you say, even if it's for 5 minutes of mindfulness, just to take yourself away, it's critical.
Yeah, and do you think, this is another question, because I've seen it in the last, I've got a degree in sports and athletic lifestyles, and that was the kind of things I looked at. I loved the sports and development, but that was 2009, and then 2012 I graduated, but it was like 2013, 14, they started to get football courses out, and then it's really, you see every course is there's a master's in performance and in directorship and other. Do you think that sometimes the market's saturated a little bit, in a way that we've got too many options sometimes? Because I was listening to a couple of the guys who work in Spain, and their culture is very much, oh, you've got two masters. Okay, that's good. Well done. But here it's, oh, wow, you've got one, you know, thing. Is it, do you think it's good to focus on one thing and actually try and do it without, I know there's so much distractions, but try and be, if you want to be a head coach, you try and be the best head coach you can be, but learn small little things. But again, saturating the market, you're going to have, for every one, and for one of me, there's 10,000 other people, but 10 years ago it was 1 in 1,000, you know.
I know.
So do you think it's, experience is actually sometimes better than knowledge? And it sounds a terrible thing, but it's, do you think it's sometimes it's good to have the young people working with you, and mature people too, but also the knowledge that you have from your experiences might, because it could just be classroom work instead of like life skills. Do you think getting out of the grass is actually the best thing, and making mistakes to learn from these?
Yeah, to a certain extent, I think it's going to be a balance of both.
Yeah.
Looking at like the course, I mean, I've been doing some courses with the FA on some free courses just on safeguarding and all the interventions that are involved in the game now. There was nothing, Laurie, there was no sort of safeguarding when I was playing. It was unheard of. Nobody ever discussed anything like that. We just got on with it, sadly. I think it's good to do both. I think it's really critical to do the courses, but I also think it's critical to get out there and work with kids at grassroots. But the courses are prestigious, and the courses are recognised, and the courses are what are going to get you somewhere. That's in my experience, certainly in the last sort of 12 to 18 months, is that the courses are critical.
Yeah, because you look at the theory, and I think during COVID, everyone was very much, you couldn't do practical, so everyone's overloaded with theory work. But then it's like you're trying to show everyone your knowledge, you know, by, oh, I'm going to do this. And sometimes it's like the old-fashioned, you go on, like, I don't want to say, but one of the websites, you go like a YouTube, and you find a session that's totally unrealistic to what you're planning. But that's, like, I came in 2 years ago to a team, and it was very much a 5 to 6, let's get done. And I'm like, no, we're going to, and I planned, and every session was meticulously planned. It was 2-3 hours of planning, so I know that this is my philosophy, and it might take them 3 months, maybe it takes 6 months, but they got it because they knew. And I asked a question, probably you work with players that are believing you, you know, more. But I said to the players, because I was testing them, do you think we should change back to our normal style? Because we tweaked it and said, no, we're going to stay to this one because it's working. And then we have to change it. Then we know what subs we make. Because see, I knew, I played 3-4-2-1. I love the box thing. Well, I'm not going to take any credit for that, but obviously I've done it before Guardiola, but that's a different story that much. But the thing about it, I learned, is the players knew, okay, so if I go there, I know that I can go into a 4-2-3-1 or a 4-3-3, because they knew that it's the same principles, just the different formations. Do you think it's good that you talk about kind of the courses is great, but and the experience, but is it good to, it sounds a terrible question to ask, about failure? People fail and they sometimes can't deal with failure, and then it's a very much a, we struggle because we don't think we're good enough. When sometimes it's the failure, but it's how you, it's not about how you react to it in a way, it's how you get your feedback, and it's how you go to the next level, because you're not going to pass everything. You lose more than you win. But do you think it's good? But then some people really struggle with failure, and then they give up because it's too hard sometimes. And that's right. But it's about learning from your mistakes. And if you learn by 10% of your mistake, it's still an improvement. Do you think as humans, we really struggle with negative bias a little bit towards ourselves because we don't think we're good enough, because we fail, and then it's we really struggle? And I've seen that in the kind of men's and the women's game, you know, like when you make a mistake, the players start to go into their shell, and then it's, or everyone panics, when sometimes it's actually just human nature to panic a little bit. Fight versus flight, basically.
I think it's been quite interesting, hasn't it? Because kind of running up to Christmas, Man United were going through a bit of a a bad patch.
Yeah.
And Skinner was getting quite a lot of stick on Twitter. And it was kind of the first time that I've ever sort of felt a resentment to a female manager.
Yeah.
Obviously, you see it in the men's game all the time. They you know, they lose a few fixtures and, you know, the whole world comes crashing down. Let's get him out. You know, he's not doing any good. His formations are rubbish. We need to get someone else in. But to see it in the women's game...
yeah, it's unheard of a little bit. A little bit. You wouldn't expect... Because you've seen it in the... I think there was a... I've only got 2 minutes left, but we've got... But I think you talked about it because you've seen it on Twitter. One of the staff members of the ground had to tell one of the people to stop shouting Skinner out and all that. And you wouldn't have... And when, you look at the Everton coach or Leicester, when Leicester lost 3, 5, 6 games in a row, in the men's game, they'd be gone. But in the women's game, I think it's the best thing, is they actually stick by you, you know. And then you look at Tottenham, you know, like they done really well in the women side, then had a bit of a dip, then they got their win against Arsenal for the first time. Just the last question is, do you think in the women's game that the patience is actually good, you know, having that kind of structure of a managing director for the women's side, you know, versus, so there's a different part of the same club, one club, but there's a different department. Do you think it's good to have specialised people in that department?
Yeah, and I think we see that a lot in the game. I mean, looking at the documentaries that Chelsea had on, I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah.
And whether they're learning from the, the errors of the men's game and what's not working, maybe, you know, whether the women's division is going down the, you know, I know they've got sort of like mental health support, and if it's not happening in the men's game, why is it not happening? Let's do it in the women's game. And hopefully it's happening because of that, and because it's unsuccessful in the men's, they're concentrating on the, you know, the mental well-being of the players, which is it's fundamental. It's not, you know, it shouldn't be about just kicking a ball on a playing field. I think fundamentally we've got to get the support in there for these girls that are brought in under these unbelievable circumstances now having careers playing football when, you know, and we're only talking less than 10 years ago, it wasn't even heard of.
Yeah, no, definitely. But what a good way to, you know, finish. But thanks again, Izzy, for talking to me.
Oh, brilliant, Lauren. Really enjoyed that. Thank you very much.